Over the last couple of weeks, as we were building into I wouldn't say Christian, but as we were building into Christmas, I was talking about a lot about prayer, if you were paying attention, about how to handle prayer when it's decades long of praying for things. Today I'm going to talk a little bit different angle of prayer. What happens when you pray a prayer of faith and God does it right now? How do you act and respond to that? And that's a lot of times the way we want things to happen, and sometimes it does happen, and it's awesome, but it calls for a response from us. We can't read the Bible and just take parts of it. We have to take the whole counsel of God's Word. And one of the things we have to recognize is there are moments where, hey, we like the part of being filled with God, and we like the part of that, the comforting of being in God's presence, but it also calls us to do something with that. And so today we're going to look at that. Now, the week of Christmas break, when Nolan was 9, he was thinking, hey, I'm going to go to my room and read the Bible before I go to bed. This is great. That's like an encouraging thing. So he goes off into his room and he's gone for a while. And, you know, my son, you know, he's not like grabbing like the New Testament, or, you know, as far as like John and reading through that, or the Proverbs, where you know, Proverbs works great for your devotions because there's 31 chapters and there's 31 days in the month on some months. And so you can like day of the month, chapter of Proverbs, great place. You know, Psalms, you know, kind of worshipy, exciting, and prayers. No, where does he go? Revelation. Where does he go when he's reading it? You know, not to the beginning where it's really exciting, where John gets to go in the presence of God and it's all inspiring. No, Nolan goes right to the middle of Revelation, and I go in to put him to bed, and he is just like, his eyes are like gigantic. He's freaked out, and he just looks at me as we're talking about it, and he just said this. I wrote it down. He said, "What's up with the dragon trying to eat the woman's baby? That is freaking me out. I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep tonight." Yeah. So there's those moments in the Bible when we read it and we're just like, I don't want to experience that. I don't want to see that. We're kind of like, I'd like to know what that all means because of all the symbolism, especially in an apocalyptic book like Revelation. What's that all mean? But there are other passages of Scripture when we read them in the Bible that, man, we secretly, or maybe not so secretly, wish that would happen to us. And today I'm going to share one with you. It's a famous story. We have experienced it. We have read it numerous times. And I guarantee you, we wish we could experience this one. Or we wish they had a YouTube channel where somebody had a camera and they were filming it, because we would love to see the situation. And it's stuff I'm going to unpack in a different way when we look at the book of John. But it's a story that is repeated through the Gospels multiple times, so we can get different angles of it. And it's when Peter walked on water. See, there's this unforgettable night on the lake that occurred for Peter and the rest of the guys that were in the boat. And so I'm just going to read through the passage, and then we're just going to take time this morning to unpack it. It goes like this. Matthew 14:22 says this. "Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd." And in a couple weeks, we'll kind of unpack everything. There's a crazy day that day. There is so much that you can unpack in that day, and we're going to explore it when we look in the book of John. But after he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come out to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God. So let's unpack that this morning. There's good stuff there. Don't you wish you could have experienced it that day? I hope I would have been like Peter, not the rest of the guys, because it would have been neat if the story said, and all of them piled out of the boat. But wouldn't that have been neat to experience that day, or night, actually? So it's 3 a.m. or later, and there's 12 guys in a boat, and they're half a mile from their destination. They are physically exhausted. They're tired. They started the day rowing. They have been up for probably 24 hours or more. Their planned getaway for prayer and refreshing ended up being a day of work. They spend the day ministering to people, then serving a big meal to people, then cleaned up the mess and collected the leftovers. And that's referring to the feeding of the 5,000 men up to 15,000 people with a little kid's lunch. So we'll unpack that in John later this spring. They ended the day rowing. All night spent fighting against winds and waves. They are soaked from the waves breaking over the boat, hitting them, and the sweat from rowing. I mean, they're just wiped out, exhausted. So think of yourself at those moments where you are just drained. You're just physically wiped out. Not only that, very emotionally exhausted. A former mentor, John the Baptist, has been executed. They're sad. They're grieving. It's what spawned them going out to just have a day to get away. And then the crowds kept coming, and then Jesus goes into, well, we're not in grief mode. We have to go to ministry mode. And so they're grieving, and then they're rightfully concerned for their personal safety. Their mentor's been killed by a political leader. Then they have to be wondering in their minds, am I safe? So they have that going on. They're just emotionally drained from a day of ministry. And if you've ever been involved where you're just investing in people, it might not be physically exhausting, but oftentimes it's very emotionally exhausting. So they're just tired from the ministry of caring for and teaching people. Because probably as Jesus taught things to the people, they're listening and possibly taking that and going over to a crowd over here and say, hey, this is just what Jesus said. Because they didn't have the great ability to broadcast over a great crowd, so they were probably basically instant recorders. Jesus said this, let's walk over here and share this. So they're drained, they're tired. Their hope of Jesus becoming king as everybody's getting all excited that day, their intent, wow, the whole crowds are like, wow, this Jesus guy is awesome. Let's make him king. It's getting around. So then these guys are like, hey, this is awesome. Everything we've hoped for the last year and a half or so, it's beginning to happen. Jesus is going to like step up, be ruler of Israel. It's going to be an amazing thing. And then they're seeing all this begin to happen. They're hearing the murmurs from the crowd. They're probably waiting. Okay, what's Jesus going to do? Is this going to be the moment where Jesus is like, yeah, right, I'm the king. Let's go. Let's take over. And then Jesus does something really peculiar. He says, you 12, get lost. Go get in the boat and go to the other side. He doesn't even have them close the shop down. He doesn't have them get everybody to go away. He tells them, get out of here now. So they're emotionally exhausted. Then they're set away. John 6:15 says it this way. Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, the whole crowd's wanting to lift Jesus up, withdrew again to the mountainside by himself to pray. Jesus sends them away, tells the crowd to go home, and then he goes up to the mountainside to pray. Probably to just be like, okay, God, help me to make sure I'm focused on your will and your plan and I'm not being manipulated by what the crowd wants me to do. And he sends them away because he doesn't want them to be manipulated by what is going on. But they're emotionally exhausted. So imagine when they get into the boat and they start rowing, they're sitting there alone on the water without their mentor. Curiosity has to be driving them crazy as to why Jesus sent them away. It's like, hey, we're on his team. We're his people. We're his closest people. And he's sending us away. Why? Can you imagine the questions that are just going through their mind, especially when they're exhausted? I'm sure the questions are more negative than they would normally be because they're just tired. And so they're, why are you sending us away? They're probably getting crabby and aggravated and frustrated with each other. They're just ready to kill the next smart aleck as they're rowing across the water that says, are we there yet? The spring before Nolan was born, my family and I went on a vacation to Hawaii. And we had friends in the military that were there, so it was, or before Alec Grace was born. Nolan, yeah, get this straight. So Nolan was, I don't know how old you were at that time, but we're out there on the water, and we decided we're going to kayak off one of the islands to another island across the water. And so everybody breaks up, the family are with, they all divide up, and it's me and Nolan at the time. And we get into the kayak, and Nolan was, what, nine? I can't even do the math right now. Eight. And so we get into the kayak. I'm on the back. Nolan's on the front. The kayak goes whoop. So Nolan is stretching all he can to even get the tip of his oar to hit the water as we go across the water. And then we're hitting the waves, the wind coming in towards the shores. We're trying to get out there. So as I would row and row and row, the boat would just keep getting hit by the wind and pushing back into shore. So we're way off course. Everybody else is almost at the island, and we're doing that. And Nolan just at one point turns around and looks at me and goes, hey, Dad, are we there yet? Nolan almost became fish food that day. But imagine what it was like, because I bet you there was a smart aleck on that boat that was trying to break up the tension and was just probably making jokes and stuff. I'm sure the rest of them were just like, you're going swimming right now. Because I can only imagine what it was like. They just want to be home, in bed, warm and dry and safe with a long, good night's rest. That's all they want. And here they are out on the water, wondering what's going on, tired emotionally and physically. And then Jesus takes an early morning stroll and almost walks right past them. I can only imagine what that's like. Jesus spends the night praying. Now he gets ready to go meet where they are. They've been out there just rowing and rowing and rowing. The boat's just not going anywhere. If it is, it's blowing off course. And they're like, Jesus told us to go here, so we can't go over here. So they're fighting against the wind. They're like, we have to meet up with Jesus however he's going to get there. We don't know. We're the ones that help him travel, and he just sends us away and says, meet him over there. We don't know how he's going to get there. We don't know what's going on. All these questions through their mind. They're fighting the wind. And then Jesus, being aware of the challenge they're facing, takes his time showing up. And here for a period of time goes by, we don't know how many hours, Jesus awares what's going on, and then Jesus just comes walking along on the water. Now remember, it was Jesus that put them on the boat and instructed them where to go. The challenge they were facing in that moment, from the intense wind, from the waves that are pounding the boat, from all the effort and everything that they're experiencing, from the exhaustion of just being out there, the whole challenge they were facing was a direct result of their obedience to Christ. Here's the thing we have to get into our minds. Following Christ does not guarantee you will be problem or challenge free. Sometimes walking in obedience will cause us to face even greater challenges. They're out there facing a challenge that Jesus put them on. That is crazy to think about. And then Jesus comes walking on the water near them. And he's about to walk right past him. And Mark 6:48 puts it this way when he describes the situation. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them walking on the lake. He was about to pass them by. Get this. They're rowing like crazy. Jesus just walking on the water. Here they are. Fighting, the boat's going around, the wind's going over it, and then over here is Jesus, probably if he had pockets, hands in his pockets, probably just whistling a little tune. I kind of picture like Andy Griffith, you know, just, I can't even do it right now. But he's just walking along, and I can only imagine what they're like. Rowing with all of their might, they look over. First, they're perplexed. That looks like Jesus. He's just kind of like casually walking along. Hey, guys, what's up? First, they're like, that looks like Jesus. What's going on? Then reality kind of hits their minds. People don't walk on water. And these are people that are in their element. It's not wimpy little individuals. A lot of these guys were fishermen. They spent their life on water at night. They're in their element. They're in their comfort place. They know how to fish. They know how to work a boat. They know what it's like to be on water. And they know for a fact, when you're not in the boat, you're in the water. So they see Jesus walking on the water. So their natural physical response is, it's a ghost. It's a ghost. There's no explanation for this, but it's a ghost. Here you have Jesus walking along like it's no big deal. They're facing a major trial. Sometimes our problems that seem so gigantic in the same situation to Jesus are insignificant. Could it be that often these trials we face that we allow to seem so big and allow to consume so much of our attention are really that not big of a deal to God from his perspective? Jesus is strolling along. They're in the fight of their life to control that boat. Now they're like freaked out. It's a ghost, and it's probably not the Casper the Ghost friendly kind. There can't be this a ghost on the water. This can't be a good sign for us. You got to remember, they're physically exhausted. They're emotionally exhausted. Their brains are not probably processing everything accurately to figure out what is going on. Now, they see Jesus, they see Jesus walking. I can only imagine what they're like when they're freaking out about it. And they're freaked out until they hear his voice. The minute they hear Jesus talk to them, it calms their fears. It is comforting how when we recognize Jesus is with us, that our panic is replaced with peace. The storm might be raging all around us, and we can be calm and collected. Because we know Jesus is with us. They're freaked out. They're exhausted. And then they hear his voice and they're at peace. Now, I will give you this warning that we need to learn to halt before we make a significant decision when we're emotionally or physically tired. Because sometimes we will do very destructive, stupid, sinful things when we're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, we do really crazy things. That's why when we're at that place where we feel like we're at that extreme of hunger, at that extreme of anger, at that extreme of loneliness, at that extreme of exhaustion, that we just simply halt before we make a decision. So here they are. They're freaked out. Jesus talks to them. And a little bit later, he climbs into the boat. It gets really calm. The weather stops and they get to the other side. And they ended that day in worship. I mean, crazy day. They start the day rowing. They end the day rowing. They've had a very long day. Jesus shows up on the scene. Gets in the boat, that storm calms, and the way John puts it, the boat immediately got to the other side. I mean, when Jesus shows up, when Jesus is on the scene, it calms everything. And it's amazing how this trial that can so consume our hearts and our minds, how when Jesus shows up, how it can instantly cause things to change, and how that situation that feels like it's been going on forever, because I can only imagine as they're out in that water fighting the waves, fighting against the wind, that it just felt like hours upon hours upon hours that they were out there. When Jesus shows up, it changes everything, and they're instantly on the other side. It's crazy. But in the midst of that, before all that happens, Peter asked a crazy thing. Here it is. Jesus is calmly walking on the water. I can only imagine what it looked like because the waves had to be kind of moving him up and down. Or it could be that it was just really calm and flat right where he was. Who knows? But I can only imagine what that looked like as they're in the boat, as it's rocking up and down, and they see Jesus over there. Jesus, Peter, having heard the voice of Jesus, being calm now, looks over, and he just says, Jesus, if it's really you, I want to do what you're doing. Basically what he asked. If it's really you, let me come out to where you are. But he's like, Jesus, I want to do what you're doing. Now imagine what it was like if you're the other individuals in the boat. As Peter just asked that question, imagine. I'm sure one guy's like, Pete, quit messing around. That's Jesus over there. You're in here. Quit messing around. Or, there Peter goes again with another one of his crazy things that he likes to say or do. Or, this is going to be awesome. Peter's asking to do that. He's about to take a bath. And I need a good laugh because it's been a very long day. Or maybe they're just like, oh man, why didn't I think to ask that first? Who knows what they're thinking in the boat? But imagine heaven's response. I can just see God the Father watching this all unfold. And I can just see him watching it and then him just going to the angels of heaven and everything going on. He's like, shh, everybody quiet. Focus your attention right there. Check this out. Here's a guy asking a very bold, risky request that requires me to show up or he is sunk, literally. Here's a guy asking something big. Here's a guy whose prayers have got my attention. Do my request, does my faith cause the angels of heaven to sit on the edge of their seats in anticipation of God doing something awesome, or for everyone in heaven to collectively yawn in boredom? Am I praying prayers that connect so much with the heart of God that he leans in? This was not a strange request by Peter, but really something all the men in the boat should have aspired to do. One theologian wrote, disciples were expected to imitate their masters, and Jesus is training disciples who will not simply regurgitate his oral teachings, but will have the faith to demonstrate his authority in practice as well. Or as Jesus later taught, in John 14:12, I tell you the truth, anyone who has faith in me will do what I have been doing. He will do even greater things than these because I am going to the Father. Peter wanted to be near Jesus or to be with Jesus. Peter wanted to be doing what Jesus was doing. Peter wanted to be like Jesus, which is really the essence of being a true follower of Jesus, imitation. Paul, writing to the Ephesians, put it this way in Ephesians 5:1, be imitators of God, therefore, as dearly loved children, and live a life of love just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Paul later wrote to the Corinthians, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Peter steps out of the boat and walks on the water. I don't think he thought about it. I don't think he questioned it. I think as soon as Jesus said, sure, I'd imagine he is jumping right over the side of that boat without any concern. And if you've ever been boating before and ever been to a place, I remember going down to Lake Kincaid down in the south, and there's these nice cliffs right up against the water, and we would pull the boat up underneath them, climb out and go up on the side of the cliff, and then keep challenging each other who would go higher. And so you're, you know, 20 or 30 feet up on this cliff overlooking the water, and then you climb it up and it's great, and you get up to the top and you're like, this is awesome, and then you get your feet right there and you turn and you're like, and I can remember the last time I did it, it felt like I became one with the rock. It's like my legs just instantly seal. It's like my feet could not move. I'm like willing the top of my body, and my feet are like welded to that rock, because I like realized this could hurt if I land wrong. And so I'm welded to it, and I'm like, I can't. And I'm like, and it took me like 5 or 6 minutes to like somehow get from my brain to my feet, let go of the rock and jump. Everybody's looking at you like you're a weirdo, and you got 8 people in line behind you that are ready to shove you off of the rock. And so it was like really hard to jump. But I'd imagine for Peter, it was just like, okay, whoa. Peter steps out of the boat and walks on the water, because with Jesus, the impossible becomes possible. The impossible comes possible. Peter wanted to be with Jesus, doing what Jesus was doing. If you want to walk on water, then you have to get out of the boat. If you want to do great things, then you have to take calculated, not foolish, risks. You have to leave the perceived safety for potential danger. You have to leave the known for the unknown. You have to quit overthinking and procrastinating and start moving and doing and making things happen. You have to step out. You have to move. You have to do something. And it starts with the ask. Starts with the ask, the A-S-K. And it follows with the act, the A-C-T. I ask, and then I act. I ask, and then I trust Jesus as he says, okay, and then I act on it. Because with Jesus, the impossible becomes possible. But Jesus, or Peter, would have never experienced the impossible had he not actually acted on what Jesus said was okay to do. So I ask, I A-S-K, and then I act, I A-C-T. I have to move. If I want to walk on water, the reality is I have to step out of the boat. And so Peter, for a while, is having a crazy awesome experience. He's like, woo, I'm doing what Jesus is doing. I'm walking where Jesus is walking. I'm going to be close to him, because I have a feeling he's getting really close to Jesus. And then as he's acting on something that should be impossible, that is now possible, he does what we all do when we step out in faith. He got his eyes a little bit off of Jesus and a little bit on the situation around him. And then he has that sinking sensation. Because the wind and the waves did not stop when Jesus arrived. Jesus has arrived on the scene, but the trial has not yet ended. The boat is still being pounded by waves and pushed by the wind. The whole situation's still not over, even though Jesus is on the scene and has brought peace to their hearts. The trial is still happening around them. But Peter's problem starts when he looks away from Jesus, who can be seen, and looks at the wind, which cannot be seen, and gets scared. It's the wind, the unseen force, which is only discernible by its actions on something, not the fact that he is walking on water, that freaked Peter out. He starts paying attention to all the little details that he doesn't even know if they exist. And a lot of times we do that. When we step out in faith, we start thinking, what do people think about this? What's going to be response about this? What's going to happen tomorrow when people are doing this? We start questioning all the unseen, all the imagined things that are going on, and not realizing there's Jesus right there that we can see, that just 30 seconds earlier brought us such peace. Peter has the chance to take a casual walk with Jesus in the midst of the chaos he is facing, but he doubts God's power in the very presence of Jesus. Doubt, from the Greek word disteo in your Bible suggests the idea of trying to go in two different directions at once, or trying to simultaneously serve two different masters. Do I serve Jesus, or do I get consumed by the chaos around me? And Peter gets reprimanded. And he doesn't get reprimanded for making a bold request. He doesn't get in trouble for taking a big risk by stepping out of the boat. Peter was corrected for doubting Jesus' ability to take care of him, even when the circumstances were overwhelming and outside his understanding or the natural way things should work. Jesus is right there with him. He's like within, I could reach out and touch him. We don't even have the benefit of that. He's like, I could reach out, grab his shoulder, and in the very midst of that, he doubted Jesus. Now keep in mind that Jesus promises to always be with us so we don't need to worry or fear or doubt. As we read the beginning of the gospel accounts and as we read Isaiah, we find that one of the names they gave Jesus is Emmanuel. God with us. At the end of Matthew, Jesus makes this great commission to his team of go out into all the world and preach the good news, but he ends it with, and I will always be with you. Because with Jesus, the impossible becomes possible. Now, faith is built by facing tests while trusting in God. Jesus is disappointed in Peter's inadequate faith, but Peter is learning and trying and exercising greater faith than other men at this point in time. Our faith is grown out of a personal relationship with Jesus as we closely follow him. Trials help refine our faith. I can imagine the next time that Peter stepped out in great faith. He didn't doubt. I mean, one of the situations we see is when Peter and John are walking into the temple and there's the guy that's broken and hurting and they're like, we don't have any money to help you, but what we do have is Jesus. He reaches out his hand, he grabs the arm of the other person, and I suspect he wasn't thinking about, well, what happens if I pull this guy up and nothing happens and he falls right back on the ground? How embarrassing is that going to be? I doubt that ever crossed his mind. I would imagine when Peter grabs his arm to pull him up, the thought through his mind is Jesus is going to heal him and it's going to be an amazing celebration of what God can do. I doubt there was a single doubt in his mind because his faith was being refined and he was stepping out, taking bold prayers, bold requests before God, and then something amazing happened. That faith was being refined. So sometimes we doubt, sometimes we question God. We're not sure if God hears us or we mess it up because we start doubting when we've stepped out in faith or we make a wrong choice or whatever. Allow that to be a moment where God instructs you and changes you so that the next time you step out, you're just like, okay, Jesus, I'm trusting you the whole way. And let's see what God will do. I love how powerful our prayers can be. John 14:12, I shared this earlier. Let's read the rest of that. I tell you the truth, anyone who has faith in me will do what I, Jesus, have been doing. He will do even greater things than these because I am going to the Father. And I will do whatever you ask in my name so that the Son may bring glory to the Father. And verse 14, you may ask me anything in my name and I will do it. Whew. Imagine if we prayed those kind of prayers. That's a Jesus, let me get out of this boat and be where you are kind of prayer. But that means I am praying, Jesus, I'm praying the prayers of where Jesus would be. I'm praying what's important to Jesus, not necessarily what's important to me. 1 John 5:14, this is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. And if we know that he hears us, whatever we ask, we know that we have what we have asked him for. Woo! Isn't that the kind of prayers that we want to have happen? Where when we ask it, it happens? It's because we're so focused on what's important to the heartbeat of God. Matthew 7, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find it. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks, receive. He who seeks, finds. And him who knocks, the door will be opened. Which of you, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who seek or who ask him? Whew. Our prayers can be uber powerful. Our prayers can change lives and destinies. But oftentimes they become very powerless. Sometimes it's because we don't really ask God. We think about it. We dream about it. But we've never really even asked God. To walk on water, you have to get out of the boat. You can't get out of the boat until Jesus invites you. Jesus is guaranteed not to invite you if you do not ask. When it comes to seeing prayers answered, we are always guaranteed nothing will happen if we do not ask God. Sometimes we just don't ask. Or sometimes we ask with the wrong motives and agendas, because it's really all about me and my comfort. James put it this way, you do not have because you do not ask. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with the wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. Or sometimes our prayers are powerless because we don't have an understanding of God's plan or how we can honor him. And I just read this a moment ago in 1 John 5:14. This is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. I mean, hey, if we're going to pray something as Belleville First Assembly of God, it's this. Jesus, help us to reach people, because every life matters to you and every person deserves the chance to meet Jesus Christ. If we're going to pray prayers, let's pray prayers like that. God, let's pray. God, help us to make lifetime followers of you, because you've called us to make disciples of people. So God, help us to do what we can to reach people. So this morning, we're just going to take some moments to just pray. Here it is. These individuals are in a storm. They're in a situation. They didn't even create the storm. They're in a storm. They're in a mess. And Jesus sent them through that storm. But maybe you find yourself today in a storm or a trial or a challenge. Maybe it's of your own making. Maybe it's because of sinful or selfish or unwise choices. You've created your own mess. Then can we just repent? Can we just make the necessary corrections or restitutions or reconciliations? Or maybe you're facing a storm of someone else's making. Hey, for many of you in this situation here, this storm that you've been experiencing now for months and months and months, notice of 2018, wasn't of your making. Or maybe it's a situation you face at work or life in general. It's not of your making. It's because somebody else did something and you're facing a big storm. Or maybe, just maybe, you're in a big storm because you obeyed God. But remain faithful to Jesus in the midst of the trial so that you learn what you need to learn, so that you experience what you need to experience, and watch as Jesus gets all the accolades. Then see how quickly Jesus can make the impossible become possible as the trial suddenly ends. Because with Jesus, the impossible becomes possible. I love the response of these people as they get to the end of the situation. They experience worshiping Jesus at the end of the trial. They start the day, oh, we're grieving. John the Baptist, our friend, our mentor before we met Jesus, he's gone. Oh, we're tired. We've spent the day ministering to people and it's just been exhausting when all we wanted to do is get away and refresh each other. And now we've ministered to the masses, the biggest ministry we've done so far, and we're exhausted. Then we're spending the night killing ourselves trying to get across a lake, and we can't even get a break with the wind pushing us. It's pushing against us. We're even in a bigger trial now, and they're like, we're frustrated, we're tired, we're confused. We think Jesus is going to be king, and he's not. Even our whole lives, how we thought things were going to play out aren't playing out the way we thought they would or should at this time. Jesus shows up, the impossible becomes possible, and then from them starting the night of rowing, thinking, hey, he's going to be the next king, this is awesome, we're going to have this political revolution, then they realize, oh, that's not God's plan at all. He truly is the Son of God. He truly is the great I am in the flesh among us. And then their response is simply worship.